Hello and welcome to another Duel the Day podcast. Today we get the pleasure of speaking to Cam Hall. Personally, Cam is a loving husband to his bride Kim and is a father to his two young children. And professionally, Cam is a master educator, a trusted leadership advisor to online coaches and entrepreneurs, creator of Fight the Dad Bod, and leader of the Dads Making a Difference Mastermind. Cam started Fight the Dad Bod to help fathers live fit, healthy, and fulfilled lives with their families. And his Dads Making a Difference Mastermind challenges men to create a vision for their family, their business, and their impact, and challenges them to grow in six key areas: spiritually, emotionally, physically, financially, professionally, and intellectually. Join us today as we explore what it means to be men in today's society and how we can all make a difference in our communities.
And this has been going on in my life, and I've realized the importance of being surrounded by people who have similar viewpoints, similar outlooks on life, are pushed to accomplish similar things. And when you're ripped apart from that and you're put around people who might not have the similar interests of you or aren't as motivated as you are, it's really hard to connect.
Hello, hello.
Morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Doing well. Just had a good Easter weekend. How about yourself?
Yeah. Same. It was good. Enjoyed it. Hi, Tyler.
Hey, Cam. What's going on, man?
Not much. Good to see you guys.
Good to see you as well. How was your Easter? Did you have anything special go on? Do you have like extended family come in or?
Yeah. Well, we got my wife's parents are here right now, and that was it. Just them and us, and spend some time together.
Nice. Yeah, I had my mom in town. I only get to see her 3-4 times a year, so always a pleasure to spend some extra time with her.
Yeah, that's good. Nice to have mom. Did you make her cook, or did you take care of that?
She's actually funny enough, she's on a diet, a fairly strict one. She listened to one of our other podcasts and got connected with a doctor that was talking about nutrition on there. Unfortunately, hasn't heard this episode yet, so but she was on a pretty strict diet, and so we kind of just cooked together. But yeah, I usually try and cook whenever she's in town. My dad's a chef, so love making just random meals and things like that. And I can almost cook anything. I can't bake though. That's off the table.
That's somehow the part that didn't infiltrate our bloodline.
The baking. I just think about it like this. To me, cooking is an art form. You kind of mix things as you see fit. Baking is a science. And I mean, science was never my thing, at least not like that in the kitchen. That's just, I'd rather be artsy with it. I'd rather create.
That's good.
Yeah.
I love baking. Man, I grew up, my first job was in a restaurant. I was 14 years old, started as a dishwasher. And within a couple of months, I was cooking in that restaurant, 15 years old. And I remember it was just me and the manager, and she used to teach me, like, we made everything from scratch, like everything, which was nice. Awesome. But the best part about it was learning how to bake, because we did all our baked goods. So it was like a coffee shop, you know, line cook thing. I think 125 seats in the restaurant, but we did everything from like all your types of pies to squares to cinnamon buns, all of it. And so one of the best gifts I got for my wedding was this manager, her name was Nora, for my wedding gave me this big binder of all the from scratch recipes.
Oh,
my family still loves when I pull that out every once in a while, make a pie, make some cinnamon buns, and yeah, I enjoy it.
Those are the best recipes too, especially when they have like the classic ingredients. Ooh.
Yeah. The classic, not so healthy.
Yeah. I mean,
but delicious, but delicious.
See, that's the problem with all these foods these days. They're all delicious and they're all wildly bad for you. You
not
know,
so much.
No, there's
moderation.
Tons of good.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's, I guess that's the problem with all of like the packaged goods is like generally they taste pretty good. But obviously like there's tons of great tasting food out there. And a lot of it to me is how you prepare it.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about salt. So, my dad, when he was in chef school, after he graduated, I asked him, I was like, what's the biggest thing that you learned in chef school? And before he was a good cook, whatever, but he said the use of salt. And that's not usually what you think it means in his mind. It's he needed to add more salt than he was before, like before he went into chef school. Yeah. So like
draws the flavor out, draws the flavor out, makes it taste better. Right.
Yeah. Is that a good thing that he's adding more salt?
It depends on how much salt. We all need salt. Like, you need that in your body. To an extent.
Right. Yeah.
When it's used in cooking and it's used the right way to bring the flavor out, that's great. But if you're going to sit at a table of, let's say, already pre-prepared fast food and you're still dumping extra salt on it, you might have an issue.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that's my grandmother.
Yeah.
That's, that gets to be a lot. Plus, you know, we need a lot of salt on her food sometimes. And I could say that fine because I know she doesn't know how to listen to this. So,
yeah. Yep.
We're all good.
Yeah.
But so Cam, so I know you started out or you still are a school principal, right?
Yeah.
Do you still do
yeah,
that?
So principal.
Nice. So you had a career or you still have your career in education. And then now you have the fighting the dad bod and then the dad father mastermind group. Where along kind of your line in education did you see or feel a need for you to create those other two entities? Was it something that you just you needed yourself and then you were able to bring that out into the world for other people? I guess what was kind of that transition area to where you're like, this is something that I feel called or something that I have to do right now?
Yeah, good question. I think in everybody's life we go through different seasons, right? And I'll give you some insight into what I'm doing right now as we speak, like where I'm sitting. I changed location today. I'm in my bedroom. And if you could see the setup that I have right here, you would think this is, if people could see this, they would laugh. I've got like my camera, of course, and a light and the window. But I've got my computer set on a basket on a stool from the kitchen. I'm sitting in a chair and have a pillow behind me so I'm not slouching. And then my microphone, I hope you can hear me well, is on top of some old textbooks that I found in a box to bring the microphone high enough because it's sitting on a stool. And the reason is because we're doing some renovations in our house right now. And my office, the contractor is not done my office. The flooring's not done. And by the contractor, I mean me. So I'm not done my office yet. I put the flooring down, so I had to change location. But the reason I share this is because right now I'm looking down at these two textbooks. And it reminded me of a different season in my life and my wife's life. And the first one here, and I could show you, but I'd have to move the mic, is called Principles and Practice of Nuclear Medicine. And the one below it is Principles of Anatomy and Physiology. You see, my wife and I both started off in university getting Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology degrees. So that's where we started. I went into education and she went into nuclear medicine. So one of us overachieved. And then, you know, you go through life. And I started in that time being like, I want to be in education. Why do I want to be in education? I want to be in education because it drew something out of me that I didn't know was there before. And that was that connection piece. I love connecting with people. The problem with it is I don't often love like listening to other people. Like I was not a school kid. Like I have in my office, I'm a vice principal of a high school, like you said, and in my office, I have what's called my detailed academic report, which shows all my grades through all my schooling. Now I can print that off at any time for any school kid in our school. And there's oftentimes where we'll have conversations where I'll be like, hey, school can be tough. And I didn't really enjoy school, but here's why I'm here. They're like, we don't believe you. And so I'll pull it out and I'll show them. I'm like, here's my solid 51% in math 30, grade 12 math. Here's my 51 in chemistry, you know, like, and the reason I got into education was to connect and have real conversations. It was not to disseminate knowledge and I'm an expert and do what I'm telling you. And when I was in university, I was playing college basketball. I was with my wife. We were dating at the time. But I was playing college basketball and I had to volunteer in the community. I don't want to call it community service. That has a pretty negative connotation up here. So it wasn't community service. I did not do anything legally wrong or against the law. But we did call it. It was our service hours for our team. And I had no car. I was taking the big white limo everywhere, you know, the public transit bus. And I was taking that everywhere and I had no wheels to get anywhere. So I walked by this elementary school every day. And I thought, I was like, I wonder if I could volunteer there. And at the time I was doing my principles of human anatomy and physiology and my bachelor of science and with a hopeful to do a pre-med designation, physiotherapy. And I was walking into this elementary school and volunteering in a grade 3 classroom. And after about 2 months, I'm like, I kind of like this. So the next semester of college, I volunteered in a nearby junior high school, grade 7, 8, 9. Loved it. Did that for about 4.5 months and had a really good time. I was like, man, I think being called to change the direction. And so I moved to a new city, went to a new college, new university, and got an education degree because I felt that. I was like, man, I think I'm meant to do this. And so now I've been a teacher for 17 years, in education for 17 years, in administration for 6 of those. And at some point along the journey, being an educator started to translate into different parts of my life. And that's when I became a dad. And I became a dad and I was like, struggling with my own health, struggling with my own fitness, my own balance in my life, you know, 2 young kids. And I saw other guys doing the same. And I had discovered a system and a practice that really worked to help me maximize my health. And I was like, I want to help other guys do the same. So it was that calling of like helping other people and connecting with other people that called me to start Fight the Dad Bod in 2015 through an Instagram account, sharing my adventures with my family and my kids. And people would reach out because they're like, how do you do this? And so you asked, like, when was it? I think I've always had this, how can I connect with other people in a way that's meaningful? And maybe selfishly, because it just validates our purpose. You know, I think we all want to do things that we know we do well. And I just have a knack for connecting with people in a way that they know that I'm actually listening to them and not just patronizing them. And so Fight the Dad Bod morphed from an Instagram account where I was sharing hikes with my kids to a full-blown coaching program where I was able to connect with hundreds of men and learn so much about men. And then that goes into the new season of learning where I was like, oh, these guys were coming to fitness nutrition coaching calls and they were bringing up stuff about being like time balance and relationships with their wife, and how do I be more present when I'm exhausted? And man, I have this big thing coming up in my career. I don't know what decision to make. How do I do this? And so in 2022, I myself was going through a really tough spot. And in that moment of silence, I was like, guys need more. And that's where the idea of dads making a difference came from. So we still got Fight the Dad Bod, but now over here, I can serve guys going through my own experience, things that I've navigated as a 43-year-old man, and I'm able to speak into their life, hopefully so they can avoid the pitfalls and the roadblocks that I faced. So everything came with the season. Education, I love it. I'm still vice principal. Fight the Dad Bod's great. Love connecting with men in that community. Dad's Making a Difference is a great place for me to connect with men more holistically in a way where we can dive into the harder issues. So I hope that answered your question. There's no like jump off point. I think it's all very natural in the how this all morphed together.
Yeah.
I still every day like question, should I be doing all of this? And my wife will walk in the bedroom and I'm reading and I love to read. She's like, you just need to like settle for a bit. Like you're doing so much. Like you don't have to do it all. I'm like, no, but I can do this, this, and this, and this, and this. You know, like, and she's like, I love your ideas, but I hate that you're just like so hard on yourself and you want to do everything perfectly. And I don't know about you, Nico and Tyler, but like, you can't do 5 things at 100%. We just don't have that capacity. No. And so there's times in my own journey right now that I need to be very honest with myself. And I would encourage others listening to this to be honest with yourself. Are you doing everything well? Or are you doing everything all right? And I feel right now I'm doing everything all right. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like that's kind of an intrinsic trait with some men that, like, since we're problem solvers, we like to find lots of things that we can get our hands into and try and fix. But really, yeah. Like, if you're really not able to fix all of those problems at 100% or at the way they should be fixed, shouldn't be trying to do all of that at once. And I think the other side of it too, and you answered this with how you talked about your story and the seasons and everything, is if you're passionate about what you're doing, that's the thing you should be focusing your energy on. You know, I think that's important to call out too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It doesn't leave, I'm going to tell you, doesn't leave much time for golf.
You know? No, no, it doesn't. Unfortunately,
that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, no, no.
But it doesn't. It doesn't. And I say that jokingly. I know both you guys love to golf, and so I say that jokingly, not to judge, but I love golf as well, and it's been something that I've had to be more intentional about planning. So where it used to be, I could just get up and go, sit on the couch, be like, it's April, the Masters is on. Oh, I could go hit some balls, get in the truck, and go. I have to be like, okay, no, between 4 and 6 on Saturday afternoon, I have a window of time. I'm planning to go do this. And you just need to be more intentional.
Yeah. Yeah. You can definitely still do all of those things you're passionate about. Just takes a little extra planning.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I love what you said about how it was, you kind of felt it was just this, you just had this love for connecting and having a community approach to things. And that was, it's kind of something similar I went through recently, is I think your wife and mine are the same person with, like, why do you do so many things? Stop doing so many things, because just pick something. I'll support you in whatever you do, but just pick something, right? I was just kind of going through, like, okay, what do I feel like I want to do? What am I supposed to do? Or what's my purpose? What was I made for? And so I just kind of, like, went through all of the things that I want to do, right? I wanted to play professional golf to just see how far I could go with golf. I wanted to, I've wanted to have a bar, a restaurant, or a food truck. I've wanted to build a, now I'm just drawing blanks, certain, like, video game streaming platforms. I've noticed a great community aspect with there, and how people are able to just help that demographic, that group. So all of these things, and I'm like, what's the connection between them all? Like, why do I want to go do this? Why do I want a restaurant and a food truck? Why do I want to play professional golf? Why do I want to do all of these things? Because I was always thinking that whatever our calling or purpose is, it's a tangible thing. It's to be a doctor and save lives. Oh, it's to be a firefighter to save other people's lives. It's to, manage people's finances, right? Like, it was a tangible thing. And when I looked at all those other things, it was like, no, I want to play golf because I want to use that platform to help underserved kids learn about life through the game of golf. I wanted to do the food truck or restaurant because I know the value that people can share and create memories with their families around food and be the vector for that. You know, I wanted to do streaming platforms and build other communities because having just that, establishing that group around a game or around a particular activity. And so it all boiled down to, like, I want to create communities. I want to create places for people to come to that they feel that they're a part of, that they can be vulnerable in, that they can talk to others with. And so, like, I love how you arrive to where you are now. Like, I feel that recently. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem. I look back when I was in university. University college. So I'm in Canada. So we call our universities, colleges, like community college, and universities, like you get your full degree. Yeah. So when I was in university finishing my first degree, I actually had finished my eligibility before I was done my degree. So you only get 4 years of collegiate eligibility at that time. And so I finished playing basketball for 4 years. Of course, I told you guys I changed my mind of what I wanted to do. That usually sets you back a couple of years. Right. And so I was one of those guys who stuffed my first 4 year degree into 6 years because I was playing sport full time. And then I was also working, and then I changed my major. But when I finished playing sport, I had realized that I'd always been part of the team all the way through high school. Even in my first 4 years of college and university, I've been part of a team. I had a group of people that I didn't have to work to connect with. It was the very first day of training camp. We were thrown together. You can see who's going to make the team. You get together. And now there's 14, 15 guys who you are with each other every single day, almost of the entire year. Because even in the off season, we would play. And so we were just balling all the time. And these were my friends. And these were guys that I was forced at first to be connected with. I didn't have to work for it. Like, it was done for me. It was like, here's the team list. Let's go. When I finished playing, I had a really hard time identifying who I was. I wasn't a member of the team. I was no longer Cam, the basketball player. I was in a new university in a new city. No one knew who I was. And it was this really eye-opening piece of me. I was like, I don't know how to make friends. Like, I don't know how to like interact with people who have a little bit of different interests than I do. And I don't want to hang around all the basketball people because they're younger than I am now. They're like 3 or 4 years younger than I am. And so I struggled through that time, Tyler, identifying like, what's the importance of community? And I think through my struggles of being pretty lonely for a long period of time until I got my first teaching job. And now you're part of a team, right? You're part of a staff. You're part of a staff of, at that time, the middle school I was in, my first job was like 70, 80 staff. But you have your department, you have your people. And all of a sudden now I have friends, but the work friends. But I'm going to tell you something. When I left that first school 7 years later, I was no longer friends with those staff members. Like, we were acquaintances, even though we're in a small city. I went to a new school and I created a new quote unquote friends, a new community. And this has been going on in my life. And I've realized the importance of being surrounded by people who have similar viewpoints, similar outlooks on life, are pushed to accomplish similar things. And when you're ripped apart from that and you're put around people who might not have the similar interests of you or aren't as motivated as you are, it's really hard to connect. So Fight the Dad Bod first started as a one-to-one coaching program. And it was like, again, through my story and everything else, but Fight the Dad Bod started as one-to-one. I was like, oh, this is great. I get to connect with guys, but I think these men would really appreciate connecting with each other. And so I created teams, little pods, and put guys together based on what I knew about their interests. And it was then that I saw we had a really kick butt coaching program, but then we had a community. And once you have community, you have momentum. And so even with dads making a difference, like, the podcast is fun, the one-on-one calls are great, but it's the online community, because men, you guys, myself, we thrive in community and we struggle in isolation. And I see so many men right now, Tyler, who don't have community, who don't have that constant line of what am I interested in across all these different places that I step into, whether I'm going to be a professional golfer, run a food truck, like, what are my things that I bring to every situation that are consistent? And how do I make every community that I walk into better? And is it better when I leave than when I got there? And I think for me, that's a big driving force too.
That's an amazing set of values to have, like, with what you're doing, to want to help people and grow those communities. And you talk about like struggling in isolation, and I can definitely attest to that. I think I'm used to it at this point, and I understand that at least for the choices that I've made, I'm going to find some level of isolation in what I'm doing. But with the podcast, with trying to learn new things and go out and physically use my hands and be in nature, I'm minimizing that isolation. But that's absolutely right. Like, you have to find people that are like-minded, because that makes it easier to share, makes it easier to establish goals, move forward. I mean, I can share a story. I told you my mom was visiting here recently, and she shared with me a story about trying to talk with other people, both in the workplace and outside, that like have no interest in what she's talking about, or no knowledge of what she's talking about. And it creates like super awkward situations, and your community gets smaller in those settings. So
yeah,
you're absolutely right.
And I'm not saying don't accept other perspectives or don't seek out other perspectives.
No,
I think that's
absolutely
really important.
Yes.
But when we are thriving, when we are at our best, we feel that not only are we part of a community, but we can contribute to it. And when we can contribute and we know we have purpose and we know we have meaning, that's when we feel our best, and that's when we're at our best for other people as well. And often that feeling of, hey, I can add value, it's because I'm around people where, one, I know where they are because I've been there, or we have something in common where I use this conversation window analogy. I learned it somewhere along the way, where our window is open so we can have open dialogue back and forth and ask questions and challenge each other. Where with somebody new who has a different perspective, it takes some time for me to gain understanding. So that window is opening and opening and opening. That takes time. But in a community where we thrive, we need to feel that we have input, that we have to have engagement and belonging and an impact there. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, where? Go ahead, Ty.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to jump on when you were saying how you see a lot of men that just kind of sit in isolation. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that a lot of men stay in isolation when there's so like yours, there's so many communities out there that can give them a place to thrive in and feel a part of a team that's consistent, right? And it's not a job change, like, oh, there goes this team, now here's my new team, right? I mean, what do you feel that the barrier is there?
You know, I'm very curious about this. So one of the things I've read, and Dr. John Delaney has an amazing book. Can't remember. So it's not his Build a Non-Anxious Life book. It's the one before that. And he was talking about the difficulty that men have in making friends. And they took a light approach to it. But in it, he pointed out some very things. Like, we've never been conditioned, I think, as men, to be vulnerable enough to go out and put ourselves out there, that there's this pressure on us to always have things figured out, to always be in control. And there's a point in our life where we might feel that we're in control and we have everything figured out. And then all of a sudden we look around and nobody's around us and we are alone. And it's in those moments of isolation as we grow and, you know, until you start a family and you start to have your kids, you're responsible for a smaller unit. And it's really easy to close ourselves off saying and giving yourself the excuse, more or less, that I have my responsibilities. I know who I am. I know what I need. This is it. So I've been really interested in the conversations I've had with the men in our community. I've also joined other communities. Like you said, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of communities for men out there.
Oh, yeah.
And yet they're only serving a small percentage of the men who are out there. So I was in a mastermind group, for instance, 151 men. Well, how many men are there in North America? Well, it was like, 300 million, 250 million men.
Yeah,
and there's 151 men in that group. Like men are seeking connection, but I believe that we get to the point where we're like, too old to make friends. That's beyond my comfort level. I don't know how to do that. I'd rather just, even with my quote unquote friends, do you get together and just talk about the game? Or do you ask each other like really tough questions? Do you have unfiltered conversations? Do you ask each other about your relationship with your wife, your relationship with your kids? Do you challenge the men that you interact with on their presence with their kids and their intentionality in what they're doing? I've called guys out before, like, man, are you just chasing money? Like, are you just chasing money right now? Like, you're chasing status and money for acceptance, and yet you have a family around you who accepts you no matter what. And one of my mentors used to say, you don't want to come home with a fistful of dollars to a house full of strangers. And so right now, like, what are you chasing? My mentor, Big A, Aaron Walker, says that. And so I want to answer your question, Tyler, and just say, hey, this is why guys are struggling with community. I don't have an answer for that. I'm every conversation I have with men, I'm curious to see why they're alone. And I found that in my conversations, I've learned that everybody has a different reason. A broken relationship. They can't find somebody that they connect with. They can't find somebody who has something in common with them. They don't know what they want from a relationship with another man, in an interaction, in a friendship. And so they shy away from it until they figure it out. So, yeah, it's a great question, Tyler. I'm going to dig into this more and more over the upcoming years, because I think this is such an important part of society right now, is we need strong men who are connected.
Definitely. No, that's a question that certainly interests me. And the only thing that kind of came to my head while you were talking there is if there's a, I'm sure that there is a psychological component to it, but I wonder if, you know, we get to this point to where, you know, maybe this only applies to fathers, where it's now you're more responsible for children, more a bigger or a growing family. And there's this like passage of passing of the torch that happens to where it's like, okay, I am the head of the household now. Intrinsically as men, we're leaders, right? We want to be this figurehead or the beacon for our families. And now it's okay, we just shift into this provider mode to where, we, like you said, we need to have the answers. We need to know everything. We need to guide our kids and our family in the right direction. And so we just close off the whole other side of, well, I still need to keep feeding myself these things so then I can give them away to my family. But maybe it's just, there's just that block there where those two points collide and we don't, we stop improving ourselves so we can just focus on our families, where in reality, we're now doing them a disservice by not continuing to grow ourselves.
Yeah. Can I share with you guys something I read yesterday?
Yes.
I'm reading this book. It's called, I don't have it behind me.
Hopefully it's not below the mic there.
Read. No, it's right here. It's called The Men We Need. It's by Brant Hansen. And one of the things he said, and I just put it down, and so I want to just read the note. It says, men are called to be protectors, keepers of what we are entrusted with. Men must show willingness to take action, because when we don't take action, we feel inadequate, because truly we are if we're not taking action. And it's not because we're not capable, it's because we're not able. And to be able, you must be unstuck. Men are not meant to be passive. We are meant to be at our best. And when we champion the weak and vulnerable, use our strength to safeguard the innocent and provide a place for people to thrive. And when I read that, I was like, this speaks to so much of my personal experience and when I have felt inadequate. And I'm like, am I championing the people I need to be? Am I looking out for the vulnerable? Am I being a provider, like you said, Tyler? Am I also being a protector? Am I doing what I can with the abilities that I have? Because if I'm not doing what I can with the abilities that I have, then I feel inadequate. And I think there's times where we're in isolation, going back, bringing the conversation back to that, is when we're in isolation, we are not able to use all of the abilities that we've been given as a gift, and we feel inadequate. And when we do that, we tend to shut ourselves in, because we feel that we have no purpose. And so this greater idea of purpose comes with this adequacy, and I say, hey, I'm able to be a champion here. I'm able to look out for my family while also looking out for my community, while also being a protector. And being a protector doesn't mean that I'm out there doing things that make people feel safe. It's just the fact that I'm in their neighborhood, so they're safe because I'm here. You know, it's fascinating, like the psychology of what goes on in a young man's brain, 18 to 25, and how it changes when you're like 25 to 35. And now what I've, like, I'm over 40 now, and I look back and I don't feel that I'm much different, but I think so much differently, right? So totally, it's a fascinating conversation. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also want to second that. I had an experience with that inadequacy that you were talking about late last year. Like, I'm currently, my whole work financial situation is a little odd. So I lost a job that I had in mid-2023, and I have been applying and stuff like that, but I don't have an official job right now. However, through my cryptocurrency assets and everything like that, I'm building a business. I'm doing things outside. But late last year, after I had lost the job and I found myself in that inadequate position, I had like a really down day, and I had to remind myself of all of the things that I actually had accomplished. And I think that's an important part that men need to do more of, is like, sit back and take a second and be honest with yourself. Like, did you graduate from college? Did you make difficult choices? Have you endured the loss of a loved one? Have you started and failed something and learned a lesson from it? There's so many little things that we can like pat ourselves on the back for and right. give us that satisfaction that we need to do that more often.
Yeah. Celebrate the little wins and stop comparing what you're doing to other people. Like yes. compare it to who you are and who you were, not what you're seeing through the Instagram filter. Right. So
yes.
Yeah. I love what you said there.
Yeah. And it's, I think the other thing I want to mention on that, and I'd like your opinion on this as well, Cam, is I remember giving myself the opportunity to feel bad and mm-hmm. letting it take its course. I think one of the things that men tend to do, like you said, is we push things away or we shy away from doing certain things. And that includes mm-hmm. like managing emotions. I think all emotions have a natural course throughout our lives. We're going to feel sad. We're going to feel angry, regret, mm-hmm. wherever it may be, and all the positive ones. And the key with any negative emotion to me is to let it go and have it take its natural course. Hopefully that doesn't take longer than a day or two. So you're not in the rut for, you know, weeks or months on end, but where does like letting the act of letting emotions go play in your mind?
I think it's really important. I'm a guy who struggles with that often. My wife will tell you that there's probably 5 days a month in a row where I'm just in a low spot and she doesn't know why. She's asked me this. She's like, I know, I can see it in your body language. I can see it in your facial expressions. And then she's like, you're around me and the kids. And then all of a sudden, like, you're great and you work really hard at it. And then I can see that when you're by yourself, you're just like, whoa. And I can't explain it, but I can explain what I've learned from it. If you rewind to 2022, January of 2022, I mentioned that's when my idea for Dad's Making a Difference came out of silence. I'll share a little bit with you guys. I was struggling with a lot of pressures in my profession at that time. I had a lot of things on the go. And in the later end of 2021, when we were coming out of a global event that will stay unnamed here, you know, there was a lot going on, especially in the world of education and online business and everything. So I felt like I was juggling a lot and I was under extreme amount of stress. I didn't realize it, but I was. And in May of 2021, I started to notice something was happening. I'm a pretty fit person. I run a business called Fight the Dadbot. I feel like I need to look the part. So I'm a pretty fit person, pretty active and healthy person, all things considered. But I started to experience some things in my body that were not normal. And I developed this massive lump in my neck, which was concerning. I was having irregular heartbeat, things like that. And so it all came to kind of a climax in October, end of October, beginning November 2021. And it was in the middle of the night and I woke up, and I think we've all been there when you've had either bad food and you have food poisoning, or you wake up in the middle of the night mm-hmm. and you're sweating and you're like, I need to get to the washroom because something's going to happen. Like, this is not good. I need to go. And so I got up right here next to my bed, go to the washroom, and I'm like, wait, no, like nothing. No, I'm not going to get sick and no, my stomach's okay. But I was like sweating and my heart was racing and I lost consciousness. And now I fall. I'm 6'5" in a little bit. So I fall and smash my face into the tile floor. It's about 2:30 in the morning. Wakes my wife up. My wife is 5'4.5". And so I'm right behind the door. She can't open it up. So she's running, she's calling my name. It's the middle of the night. I'm not responding. She finally gets it open enough she can squeeze through, and she looks and I'm unconscious. I've smashed my face on the floor. So I'm gashed on my face. Some blood coming out of my mouth and unconscious. So she calls 911, ambulance comes. She calls a friend. A friend comes over, keeps the kids in the basement. My two kids, their bedrooms are downstairs. She keeps them down there. I don't even know if they woke up. And the paramedics come in, they hook me up to everything. And I'm like, now I'm fine. Like, I'm like, I know what happened. I can remember what happened. I can remember the moment that I just felt like I was faint. Luckily, I didn't hit my face on the side of the counter or something, like went into the floor. But yeah, he's like, man, there's nothing, like your heart, everything's normal. I encourage you to see your doctor. You know, yeah. thing. So, and then me being me, it took me like two and a half weeks until I booked a doctor's appointment because I thought everything was fine. It was a one-off.
Wow.
Until it happened again. In the middle of the night, I woke up. I was like, whoa, what's happening this time? So I just sat on the floor and also lost consciousness, but was sitting on the floor already. So scary stuff. And so January 20th of 2022, I go to my doctor for to review some blood work based on all of this, the lump in my neck, the regular heartbeat, these, whatever they are, episodes. And he looks at me. It's 2022. I'm in Canada. We're still having masks in medical facilities at that point in time. I got my hat on. I left work. My appointment was at 8:30 in the morning. Our school starts at 8 a.m. So I was already at work for about an hour. And I said, hey, I'll be back. I got to go to a doctor's appointment. I'll be back. I go to the doctor's appointment. I put my hat on. I got my mask on. My doctor, who's my age, whose son plays on my son's soccer team, same age, looks at me and says, how are you doing? I'm like, I couldn't even answer him, man. I couldn't even answer him. I just started to well up. I don't know why. Like a big tear comes out. I'm like, I'm not a weepy guy. And he looks at me, you're not doing well, are you? I'm like, no, I'm not. And he's like, I'm putting you out. I'm putting you out on a medical leave. You don't have a say in it. I'm not going to give you the forms to fill out. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to fax it to your employer. And you're out, man. Like, you got to take some time. Here's how you're going to feel over the next 12 weeks. And I was devastated. I felt guilty. I felt like I was letting the people at work down. It was like, what am I going to do with myself over the next? It was just like this turmoil of emotion that I couldn't explain. And through that period of time, I felt so much emotion, highs and lows. But then there was a time where I felt calmness. And I started, I'm coming back to your question. I know I'm rambling, but I'm coming back to your question.
Oh, this is great.
Is in that time where, this was my prescription, by the way, my doctor looks at me, he's like, hey, I'm a doctor, I prescribe things. He's like, I think you have high anxiety. I think this is caused by stress. There's nothing biological that's wrong with you right now. Like nothing anatomical other than the lump in your neck that feels like a large vitamin is stuck in your throat every time you swallow. There's nothing like physically wrong with you. It's here. And I'm like, well, that's insulting, but thank you. So he says to me, here's your prescription. You have to get up at the same time every day. You got to go to bed at the same time every night. You need to get out in nature and walk your dog every single day. And you have to work out every day. That's what you have to do. That's your prescription. I looked at him. I was like, okay. So I did it. That's what I did. Every day, had a routine, got up at the same time, left the house. Kids went to school. My wife went to work. Instead of staying in the house, which I'll be completely honest. I hid in my house for 2.5 weeks. I don't want to come out because I'm a vice principal of a large high school that's 6 blocks away. And if people saw me during the day, they'd be like, why aren't you at work? And I didn't want to answer any questions. But once I got over that, I'd get up, go to a coffee shop, get some work done, do some reading, really dive in, walk my dog, etc. But when I was going through that, here's what I learned about processing emotion. I can't run from it. I can't hide from it. I need to sit in it and not stew in it. So I'm stuck. So if I'm sad, I'm sad. And I want to know, why am I sad? Like, what was it that hit me that I'm sad? Am I frustrated? Am I angry? Am I anxious about something coming up? What is it? Why am I anxious? Have I not planned for things? Is that where the anxiety is coming from? Am I stressed? Am I just in a low melancholy type state? Why is it? Have I been active? Am I eating properly? Am I getting enough water and sleep? Like, so instead of suppressing the emotions that I'm having, I've learned to like embrace them in a way that I've learned more about myself and how I function in the last 2 years than I ever did in my entire life. So when my wife says, you're down for four, you've been really down the last 4 days. Like, what's going on? I can say to her, I had a plan for this week. I'm a creature of habit. Things have interrupted my plan that irritated me. I wasn't able to get to the gym. I haven't been drinking enough water. Those things combined have put me into a spot where I'm really low. I just need to get a couple wins in. And she'll say, get off your ass and get to the gym. And so she helped coach me through it, right? Because we need that. We need to be honest with our emotion and process through it. And we also need help when people to call us on our crap and just say, go do this. And so, yeah, long answer to your question, but with emotion, I think it's really important that as men, we know it's okay to be emotional. Doesn't mean like I'm sitting around crying all the time, but it's like, hey, you know, we all have emotions. We are human beings that feel emotion, and we feel them for a reason. It's because it's trying to tell us something. So let's embrace it. Let's think through it. Let's ask questions of people around us and what they notice from us in those periods of time. And you will learn more about yourself as a man in those moments and the times where everything's going well.
Yeah, no, that vulnerability is key. We let those emotions go, and you had a physical response because you were holding on to that stress. So, like, absolutely, that's a wonderful story. That and love when you take your time to explain that stuff. It gives a lot more color and context. So, thank you. But yeah, listeners need to take that away. That if you don't let your emotions process, have some help through with your loved one or your family, and ask yourself those questions so you can let those emotions go. They're going to stick around and they're going to become that lump in your neck. They're going to become the sweat at night. Yeah. And that's where the problem arises. So we have to be vulnerable when it comes to that, for sure.
And it'll be on your face and you won't know it. And here's, do you want to know the best barometer of my facial expressions of my entire life right now? Is my 12-year-old daughter. Because I will walk down the hall and she'll be like, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm okay. Are you sure?" Because she just reads my body language, right? I'm in the truck. I'm driving her climbing yesterday. And she's like, looks over at me. "Are you all right?" "Yeah, Maya, what's wrong?" She's like, "No, what's wrong with you? Like, your face, you don't look happy." Like, she's so in tune with that, that instead of being dismissive, now I've been like, so yesterday in the truck, she's like, "Are you all right?" I'm like, "Yeah." I'm like, "Well, actually, let me think. No, Dad's got a lot in his head right now. Here's what I'm thinking about. What's your opinion?" And so I started to ask for, and that's building a connection between us. That's something I learned from Dr. Meg Meeker when I got to talk with her a little while ago. But I was just like, instead of brushing it off and saying, "No, everything's fine," Maya saw something in me that tells her that something's not all right. Let's lean into that. And let's use this as an opportunity to connection and as to model the processing of emotion. So yeah, it's cool.
Absolutely.
Yeah, love that. Thanks for sharing, you know, that experience and that story. I'm definitely gonna steal some of that with because my wife asked me the same thing like multiple times a month. Like, "You okay? You doing all right?" And you know, I've always just fine. Not always, but usually brushed it off. "Yeah, I'm fine. Everything's great." And my kids aren't old enough yet to be able to, you know. Maybe they can read the body language, but they just don't know how to interact with that. But definitely see the value in building that connection with that when they ask you. But definitely what you said with the, you know, here's the few things going on, because that's like literally all the things that you said, that's exactly what goes through my head. Like, "Oh, I didn't get to the gym the last few days. I'm not drinking enough water. I stayed up too late doing unproductive, stupid crap the last 3 days." Yep. And that's why I look irritated. And yet all of that translates into, "Yeah, no, I'm okay." Yeah. Right? I'm yeah. fine. Don't worry about it.
And here's what men do too. And men also, like, we go through that, but we also blame. We don't blame ourselves. We blame a situation, a colleague at work, my wife for not listening to me, somebody for interrupting my schedule. We don't take, it's like, okay, take a step back, Cam, give your head a shake, you know, like,
I have others. I have a question for the dads here too, because there's another aspect of this that I want to hear your opinion on. So we're talking about sharing our thoughts with the kids whenever we have those moments and they're reading our body language. I feel like that's also reaffirming that sense in the child. Like, you're in a way, you're telling the child, "Good for you. That's a good catch," and seeing that. How important is that aspect, or is that something that you see in that as well?
It's a great question. It's a question. I mentioned Dr. Meg Meeker. She's a pediatrician, wrote a book, Strong Father, Strong Daughter, Strong Mother, Strong Son. She's written lots of books. And I was able to have her on my podcast a couple of weeks ago. And I asked her that what I'm doing with Maya in the truck when she asks if I'm okay is something that I learned from that conversation that I'm trying, because I want to be intentional in that my kids will pick up on my cues of how I'm teaching them. They're learning from me. So they'll pick up on my cues of how I manage that question, how I process emotion, how I model working through it. And it's my hope that not only am I challenging myself to be more open and honest and a little bit vulnerable with my kids, that I'm modeling that for them, because my daughter's 12, my son is 9. And in 2 years, when my daughter's 14 or 4, when she's 16, and she is navigating the complexities of being a teenager and a young woman, that I want that openness and that connection to still be there so that I can say, Maya, is something wrong? Like, what's bothering you? What are you thinking? And she's not like, nothing, I'm fine, Dad. That she'll be like, well, yeah, something's wrong. I don't know what to do about this. What do you think? So it's my hope that I'm modeling in our conversations that we can trust each other, that we can be open. And as a dad, my hope is that my kids will pick up on that. And whether it's with me or another trusted adult or their, of course, their mom, that when somebody asks them if they're okay, that if they're not, it's okay for them to say so. They don't have to hold it in. Because in my experience as a vice principal, I work with near 1,300 kids in our school. And my conversations with kids often are with kids who are not okay. And they have it all, you know, packed up inside them. They can't have it processed through it. They just need somebody to listen to them and not tell them they should do this or they're wrong, but to listen and ask them questions. And so I just hope that in my modeling of that, I'm teaching my kids through that process as well.
Yeah, that definitely seems like a wonderful example for sure. What do you think, Ty?
Or did you have something else? I totally agree. You know, it's my kids are 4 and 2. And so, you know, there's not a whole lot of, there is some modeling that I can do for them, like clean up their lots toys for them.
Yeah, so there's lots of modeling that you can do, right?
There's
lots. Like right now, I think about where you're at, 4 and 2 is such a fun age. They're all fun ages, but like 4 and 2, now the youngest one is like really learning to interact. And so, yeah. You know, interact with the sibling and with parents and like you're looking at this weird pecking order thing. But it's so fun. But you are modeling in every interaction. You're modeling how to manage emotion, how to interact with each other, how to take care, how to, you know, I'm sure when you talk to your 4-year-old, 2-year-old, you get down low and you look them in the eye to show they matter and it's not a domineering type thing. You're able to, do you have boys, girls, both?
Both boys, and we don't know what the third one is yet.
Okay. Oh, third on the way. That's
we'll know at the end of August. So,
oh, that's so exciting! Congratulations.
Thank you.
But when you look at your boys, 2 and 4, do they like to wrestle?
Oh, they like, beat the crap out of each other.
Do they like to wrestle you?
They do. Until I'm done wrestling and I make them know, I'm like, all right, we're done now. I'm burying you into the couch.
But okay, so what are you modeling through that interaction? I think my son at 9, who's still, if he's in a bad mood, like he was yesterday, I'll bring him in here, throw him on the bed and we'll wrestle. And he doesn't want to. And he's like, dang, stop. And we wrestle. And I'm like, whatever, until he's like, no, he's into it because he needs it. Boys need that physical touch. But what you are modeling for your sons is that your kids know that you are a massive human being who could destroy them. Like they, like innately, they know this. And yet when you wrestle with them and you're like flipping them over and once in a while you flip over and they're on top of you and you're like, oh, you got me. Like you're showing empathy. You're showing control of strength. You're showing emotional intelligence. Like you're modeling all of these things for your boys. And so when you think about protecting the vulnerable, if I'm wrestling with my son and I like hurt him, I'm not protecting the vulnerable. And my son will learn to hurt people because he'll be like, no, I have the power. I'm in control. Where if I'm massively bigger than my son and he can like put me in a triangle hold, I've shown him some things that he probably shouldn't know as a 9-year-old, and he put me in a triangle hold and he wants to tap me out. And I'm like, tap, 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 tap. You know, like he's learning through this back and forth that you can still be, you know, caring through physical play. You can still have empathy and control, but you can still be, you know, physically active. You can still be strong. You can still be confident. So you are modeling those things. It's not like you sit them down and you teach them a lesson. This is what it means to be empathetic. It's like, no, I'm going to throw you on the couch and toss you back and forth. And when you're done, you're done. You know, and I'm not going to hurt you. And I'm going to take care of you through this.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's so yeah, we're doing a lot of modeling then. The thing I try to do the most is to just speak to them in a way that they're learning to be, the right phrase is escaping me, but socially accepted. Like the last thing that you want as a parent is to not teach or have your kids be able to play with other kids, right? Yeah. You don't want to have them come in and start grabbing toys and throwing them at the other kids and doing all that stuff, because then they aren't going to want to play with them. And then if they have that outcast experience at 2, 4, 6, like it doesn't get better from there some ways. Yeah. So
no, and if they don't manage that, or you guys don't model it, they may encounter bullying, which I definitely encountered myself. Did Cameron, have you had any situations with you encounter bullying or your kids or anything like that? Because yeah, if you don't address that, you'd be bad. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's bad. Like I remember moving when I was, it was like a week before my 12th birthday. I grew up in Calgary, Alberta, which is a city of about 1.6 million people, big center. And then right before I was 12, my family moved to a small town about an hour and 50 minutes northeast of Calgary. It's called Three Hills, but it's like 3,000 people. But we didn't move to town. We moved to like an acreage 25 minutes outside of town. It was shocking. Like I was so different than the people out there. I'd grown up in a city. I was like different style, different everything. Grade 6, yeah. Grade 7, you know, you're just heading into this and everybody was wearing like belt buckles and cowboy hats. I'm like, what is happening here? Like, where am I? And yeah. And from that point, for the next like 3 years, being in that school, like I was bullied in the tour. Like it was like every day. I didn't want to go to school. My stomach would hurt in the morning. My mom said, you go. We lived like 3 houses from the school. So she'd walk me. And then when your mom's walking you to school when you're 13, because you can't get into school because you're too nervous, that doesn't help the fact, right? That people see that. And it was just, yeah. So for 3 years, it was just brutal. And then something happened where I grew up a little bit. Like physically grew up a bit. I got bigger, got taller, I got more athletic. I went to a different high school. There was 2 high schools in our town. And when I was in grade 8, I transferred to another school. And that was amazing. It was the greatest move I could have done. We were very dominant in sport. We were like, it was fun. Like, but I was around back into that thing, forced friends, right? But yeah, that bullying, I look at my son right now and I pick up on these little things that aren't bullying, but I'm like hypersensitive to, I watch him with his friends at the park, or I watch him at the park with strangers. And if kids don't want to play with him, I'm like, oh, I wonder why not? Like, what's wrong with him? Like, what do we need to work on? Like, And he's the most social kid ever. Like, he's happy. He's, you know, he's not shy. My daughter's very shy. I was very shy, but I'll give you a story about my son real quick, because sure, it speaks to his personality. We love to camp. And so we go to these campgrounds and we'll stay. And for the first 4 years of our kids' lives, like until Maya was 5 and Bray was 3, we lived in a pop-up tent trailer for a month every year in the summer. We just like hook it up and we would just go. And our family of 4 would live out of this pop-up tent trailer from 4 to 6 weeks. And so we got to experience all these different campgrounds. Well, it'd be like 6 in the morning because my kids are up early. I'm up early, 6 in the morning. And I'm making pancakes on the griddle outside in the campsite. And I can hear Bray yelling. I'm like, what is happening? It's 6 a.m., 6:30 in the morning. And I look down, and I can see him. And he's standing outside people's campsites yelling, hey, is your son awake? Does he want to be my friend? And they're like, he's still sleeping. Okay. And then he comes. Then I'm like, Bray, like, keep it down, man. I'm like, this is my son. And then he disappears for a little bit. And he's like little, like he's like 4 or 5 at this point. And he, I'm making pancakes. I'm like, Kim, where's Bray? He has his whistle. And so if he's lost, we pulls it, whatever. And he's not too far, but he comes back. He's got like 8 kids with him. So next thing I know, I'm like 8 kids pancakes at 7 in the morning. But that's my son. And then, so when I see him and he's so open and outgoing, he's also very vulnerable and things can hurt him. And so when people don't want to be his friend or don't want to play with him, I'm like, is he being bullied? Did he do something? Is he just being awkward? Is he in somebody's space? And I start to look through my dad filter, as opposed to like taking a step back and being like, well, maybe they just don't like the, the hugs that he didn't ask to give, you know, like whatever it might be. You know, when he was kindergarten, he just wanted to hug everybody. But I think Tyler, you can speak to this too. As a dad, we're like hypersensitive to our kids and what they interact, and we want them to be well adjusted. We don't want them to face bullying, but we also don't want them to be the bully. It's this balancing act. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely seems like a gymnastics event sometimes. You know, I try to look at, so my oldest name is CJ, and you know, I didn't really have the same school background as you guys. I don't know that I ever experienced bullying. I feel like I floated the middle of the cliques throughout school. Like I was everybody's acquaintance, so to speak. But I do think about that a lot. Like, okay, what's, you know, I'll watch him go up to a group of kids that are already playing and try to get in and start playing with them. And you know, he kind of walks around the outside a little bit and he's, you know, looking from the outside in, like waiting for somebody to say, oh, hey, here's the ball or whatnot. And it's just, you kind of get hit with a variety of emotions, like, you know, just, oh, go say hello, go try to start playing or come back. You know, he just try to floats this middle ground sometimes. And so, you know, I kind of like look at a few years down the road and when he's, you know, at school for a long time during the day and wonder how he's going to interact and do those things. But I also just like letting it play out and just not intervene. You know, still be within where he can see me to where he can come back if he feels like he's tried hard enough and yeah, it didn't work. Right. But so yeah, it is gymnastics a little bit and I don't know. I feel like I need to work on it a little bit more. Myself with my dad instincts, like you were talking about. So,
yeah, that's sweet. Yeah, the one, I know we're coming close to an hour here, but the one thing I wanted to mention along this lines of bullying and how kids interact and everything like that was something that I actually heard from a comedian recently. This comedian is a little person, and he was talking about how his dad knew that he was probably going to encounter bullying in school. And so one of the things that he did was, whenever he was talking to his son, he would give him like a little fun comedy type comment about himself, you know, commented that he has a silly hat or whatever. And then he would get him to come back. He's like, okay, now your turn. And over time, he developed all of these comebacks kind of, and he was used to that type of interaction between his dad. So when he got to school and someone tried to bully him, he was a little bit more prepared to handle those situations. And I feel like that's something that I would definitely want to do when I become a dad, because I don't want my kids to go through that same type of situation that I did. And this, I feel like, is a simple way that they could maybe be prepared. So I thought that was cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
Definitely. Well, yeah, I mean, we're close to, well, we are on an hour now, and be respectful of your time, Kim. Unfortunately, I wanted to get into some of your pillars with fight the dad bod, because I definitely need to fight my dad bod for go all out on it, right? So I would love to be able to talk with you again, get into more of that aspect of what you're doing, because I think everything starts with our health, right? Everything that we talked about, all the stress management, anxiety, being able to be present for your kids and family, all of that starts with our own health, right? I mean, we can't be there for as long as we want to be if we don't take care of ourselves. So I definitely want to get in and hear what you have to say there. But in the meantime, if you want to take a couple minutes or so, just to explain where people can find you, how they can interact with you and your programs and taking that first step to being able to join the community they need.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Of course, Fight the Dad Bod, which has been around for a while. You go to fightthedadbod.com. You'll learn more about the program and coaching there. You'll see my goofy face there in the video welcoming you and give you a little information. Also, if you're on social media, @FightTheDadBod on all the platforms, Yeah. Instagram, Facebook, even Snapchat, I think. It's there. It's at Fight the Dadbot everywhere. For Dads Making a Difference, there's the Dads Making a Difference podcast with Cam Hall. You can search that up, learn more about me and the people I'm connected with and the experts in our community. And dmdmastermind.com is where you can go to find out more about Dads Making a Difference. So I appreciate you guys letting me share that.
Absolutely.
And one of the things I love to do when I get on podcasts is meet people from the audience. And so if you are listening to this and you just want to connect, I would love to learn more about you, how I could help you, how I could serve you. The best way to speak with me directly is to go to callwithcam.com and just book a free consulting call and point you in the right direction.
Excellent. Well, I definitely think people should reach out to you if they're having any of those problems with vulnerability, especially men. And if they need some help losing weight as well, definitely want to reconnect for a part two. Cam, this was a pleasure.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks, guys.